HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Lenaya Quinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, and Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist at the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
And hello, welcome to Community Matters for this week. And we're honored to have Mayor John Anaramian as our guest today. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Welcome.
We're going to be concentrating today on your vision for the Kenosha downtown. We've been getting little snippets of announcements, and I know to some extent that's the real stuff going on. But it's the vision and the why, and what you see are the results if this vision is completely implemented, that to me is ultimately interesting, and what it means for all of Kenosha. So I hope that's what we're able to address today. I thought we could start with some real general overview and then start digging deep into the parcels and all the pieces that you have in mind. So when we're talking the downtown plan, what are we really talking about?
Well, over the years, we've had a number of downtown plans, and throughout the, when you look at the downtown in general, we've tried to, in some ways, keep some of the older buildings. I mean, the city bought the Alford building, we bought the old Bardens building. We purchased those buildings so we could save them. And now we have developers who are taking those buildings over. We purchased some properties that were on the lakefront over by the Dayton Hotel, and we cleaned out that area over there. And you now have two buildings that have been built in that area already, and a third one now that is going to be coming online in that area also, which will be housing. So it's so there's some good positive things that are happening in the downtown on its own. You have the Stella, which we were able to complete. The previous administration started it, and we were able to get it finished. So that is now up and running. And you're starting to look at that now as a parking ramp that just went out to bid. And so that'll help with some of the parking that we're having in the downtown, because with all these other things happening, parking is becoming a nice problem to have. So we focused a little more in the sense of the area where City Hall is located and the surrounding areas around City Hall.
For your the plan for itself, yeah. Rather than a little piecemeal around it.
That's correct. So you're seeing all the little things that are happening. And I shouldn't call them little. They're actually rather large projects when you look at them individually. It's just we've never had so many of them happening at one time.
Right.
You also have the sale of the Kenosha News and
yes.
Herzing coming
yes.
in. So that plays a role, and that's also another reason that parking is going to be becoming an issue, and that's why the new parking ramp becomes very, very important. So when you start then focusing on the other part of the northern part of the downtown, where City Hall is, it was a question of what do you do with City Hall? City Hall is a very old building in very bad shape.
Definitely.
The cost of maintaining that building is every year gets more and more. And it's going to continue to get that way as long as we're there. It's got some sinking issues. It's got a whole bunch of things. So it is it's an old school and was never designed as a city government. And so we're at that point in time where we really need to move out of that building, take that building down. And then the question comes, everyone always thought, well, we should build something on that site. If you build on that site, you then block all the other properties from developing that are behind it and on the side of it. So if you take City Hall and we make that into almost a central park concept where you can have ice skating, we can have all sorts of different activities. The Veterans Fountains will be reprogrammed into the area and fixed and made, one of the fountains are in bad shape and we need to take the time to actually rebuild it and do it right. Those types of things that need to happen, we need to be working on for the future. But that would be what that park should be for. And so we want to create a park atmosphere there. And then what happens is you now open up all the properties around it. And that becomes very valuable in the sense of property tax that can be developed.
When you say properties around it, you're talking about, I'll use some of the vernacular, the old Piggly Wiggly. The old furniture store, which is to the west of City Hall. And then right now you've got the transit center kind of.
Right. And then across the street from there you have the old Red's Roller Rink. For those who remember
that. That one predates my arrival here.
Oh, my goodness. Now I'm showing my age. Thank you very much. Red's Roller Rink. You have then the parking lot that the city owns, and farther from Red's Roller Rink going east, and then you have the A site, which is part of Harbor Park.
And the A site is the one that's kind of bordered by Trolley Dogs,
right.
Correct? And then 54th Street.
Right.
Okay. All right.
So you have those lots now become more attractive because they all have views of the lake.
Ah, okay.
And so that's one of the reasons that if you build on the City Hall piece, you don't get as much value as we will if we take City Hall, make that into a recreational area, and then build around it. Plus, the good news is we're not displacing anybody. Literally, the majority of the property there is underutilized. And so it's a positive situation for the whole area. And so when you start looking at it from that perspective, that's the area that we're looking at building out and having developed. And then there's a whole bunch of different things that we're looking to develop on those sites. So, Mommy, just kind of keep on rolling while we're talking here.
We get to some of the specifics with the sites, because I certainly have questions, and I think that will really round out what some of your plans are. But some general questions about what you hope this development will mean to City of Kenosha beyond the downtown, and if everything is implemented in what you have in your vision, what kind of city will Kenosha be?
Well, to answer that, though, then you're going farther than downtown.
Yeah.
Because there's a whole bunch of things that are happening. You can't look at everything in a vacuum as to, okay, this is the downtown, and then nothing else is going on.
So if the downtown, though, is completed the way you want, does that make things like what you hope will happen in the old Chrysler site more attractive, or is it the other way around, or together?
I think it's more of a combination of things. The downtown is like a first step. We've already moved a long way into downtown. I think that most people haven't seen, though, that we have been doing a lot of things in uptown that they haven't seen yet. The city has been purchasing properties. We have been taking properties that the county has transferred to us on back taxes. We're looking at putting infrastructure roads in place that will shorten some of the streets or avenues in the older neighborhoods, because one of the problems we have are some of the streets are way too long. There's no cross streets. So that'll make them safer and create a better situation for traffic flow and for police patrols. So there are a lot of things that are going on besides just the downtown. Part of it happens, though, that you just have to, like I said, nothing happens fast. The downtown plan didn't just happen overnight. It's one of those things that we've been working on for a while. Uptown, we're starting to do some things in the uptown already, but there's going to be a lot more. And the Chrysler site is also tied to the uptown development. So all those pieces are tied, and there's a, I believe the Chrysler site is going to be a fascinating project in the future. What we're looking at there is an innovation center. And so it ties to the downtown, because if you create the innovation center, you're going to have a lot of younger people. You're going to have a lot of different types of innovation and new technologies. You're going to have startup companies. All those types of things will be happening at the Chrysler site, and that then feeds back into the recreational and the living in the downtown area, along with the uptown. So that's why I say you can't just take these pieces apart. They're intertwined. They may not be intertwined in the sense of what happens first, second, or third, but they're intertwined on the long range as to what they're going to develop, because downtown isn't going to develop in 2 years or 3 years. It's going to take a longer time frame. And by that time, some of these other things will also be in the process of being developed. And so they'll be intertwined in what they're doing. And then if you keep on going farther west, you have the property that the city has worked out an agreement with Paris of roughly 3,300 acres that eventually can come into the city. And that's all designated as industrial. And so some of the intentions of what we're doing is we're targeting more manufacturing, more R&D, and more tech type of companies than what we've been doing in the past. And because of that, that also will now have an impact on what's going on in the downtown area. That's why I say this is so many things are intertwined, including Pleasant Prairie. When you look at some of the companies coming into Pleasant Prairie, there is going to be a need for housing in different places and different levels and types of housing. And that's I think from the city's perspective, that's the piece that we have to make sure works. We need to make sure that we have a mixture of housing throughout the community for everyone.
I hope you were really good at chess, because it sounds like one great big chess game to me. It's very difficult, I'm sure, to keep all of those things moving and working for each other rather than against, and taking advantage of strong economic times.
And not only strong economic times, but we also have been reaching out to government and everything else. One of the things, regrettably, I think has happened between what's going on with the federal government and the state government is that local municipalities need to look to themselves and say, how are we going to do this? If we can get help, that's great, but you can't count on help. We have to determine that we're going to work on our own, we're going to make decisions, and we're going to do developments and do the things we think we need to do in the community, and we should just plan on doing it ourselves, and if we get help, that's great. We give credit to whoever came forward to help us out, but I'm not going to sit and wait for someone else to do something so that we can get things done.
A couple of the things that I've heard that you have said is you're not as interested in developers who are going after some of the low-income grants for some of the housing in these new developments at this point. And similarly, you're kind of done with warehousing. And all I'm hearing you say is innovation and tech and R&D. So are those two statements true?
Well, not quite.
Okay.
As far as the city is concerned, in the past we've given out funds to different companies for different types of projects. We're being more selective. When we create a TIF district or when we do something like that, there is a reason for doing it, and if it's the appropriate situation, then we do it. So that's how we literally are managing that. In the case of warehousing, there's not a lot of warehousing that we're going to be TIFing for. I mean, in the past we did, but again, you have to look at the economy and where people are and where our community is at. And we have changed a great deal. We've reinvented ourselves numerous times. I mean, back in the 80s, late 80s, when Chrysler pulled out, in the early 90s, we reinvented ourselves and started building industrial parks through TIFs. In the 20s, we reinvented ourselves again. And for a community to grow and prosper, they have to continue to change. And I know that sometimes is hard for people, but if we don't change, there's only two directions, forward and backward. If you don't change, you go backwards. And you can point to a lot of communities in the state that have not changed and therefore have more problems than other communities. We're fortunate. We have continued to look to the future. We continue to look to see what we can do to be innovative and change. So on that basis, I would say that we are much more selective on where we put money and as far as we go. And as far as the housing piece goes, there's not an issue necessarily that you're against development of low-income housing.
I didn't mean that either.
I just wanted to clarify that. Yeah, it's more of a question of, in certain areas, you want to make sure you have a diverse population. So you don't want low-income housing in all one location. You want scattered housing. Same with moderate-income mm-hmm. housing. Higher-end housing, though, in all honesty, where you get a large tax base, is usually on your lakefronts. So that's where you'd have those type of things happening. So again, downtown has a fair amount of mixed housing, and actually we don't have enough high-income housing in the downtown area, especially if we want to get a grocery store and some other types of things into the area. You need to have that mix of income and the mix of population.
So bringing us back to downtown, and you mentioned TIF districts. It is a TIF district you're developing. Where is that money being reinvested?
The TIF money is being reinvested in the downtown. So when you see the different projects that are happening that are TIF related, that is a downtown TIF. So an example is that if we have to replace, I'll give a perfect example. One of the issues which we'll use our TIF money for is as this development occurs, there are power lines that need to be put underground. So the TIF will pay for putting the power lines underground. There is the demolition of City Hall. The TIF will pay for the demolition of City Hall. If we have the development of the park, the TIF will pay for the development of the park. We develop another parking ramp. The TIF will pay for the parking ramp. However, when I say that, we are requiring the developer, as we get into these different projects, to actually build out a huge amount of parking. The first building they're doing, the Brindisi,
yes,
has two parking stalls per unit, and then there's a number of other parking stalls for guests. And then there is, I believe, 60 parking spots for the restaurant and retail activity on the first floor. So they are totally contained as to the amount of parking. So they will not be creating any new parking problems in the downtown area because they will handle it themselves. So why would the city then build a parking ramp? Well, we have a lot of businesses in the downtown that don't have enough parking. Hopefully with the Performing Arts Center that gets built and operated by the private sector, there we probably will have to help out with a parking ramp at some point in time. So that's my guess.
That's in addition to the one that you're working on right now.
The one that we're already building, right.
Okay.
My guess is in the future, and this is many years down the road, this isn't anything that's happening tomorrow, you're probably looking at three parking ramps in the downtown area to deal with the amount of parking I think that you're going to have.
Makes sense. It really does. And it's exciting to see that, like you say, it's a nice problem to have.
It is. It's when you think back when I was a bit younger, you were always young.
Oh, yeah.
But when I was a bit younger, we used to always say, the day we have a parking problem downtown would be wonderful. Well, we have a parking problem downtown, so we need to deal with it.
So let's go back to marching through the projects, and we were talking about where City Hall is now, and that should become parkland. So if we look to the north, that's really your first major announcement, at least in my mind, and that's the Brindisi. Talk to me a little bit about the project and then how it's structured. There is a developer who came forward with that project.
Right. They will be coming to the Plan Commission, I believe, December 4th or 5th, I don't remember the date. It's a Thursday, that first week in December, for their first hearing on their building, which is the conditional use permit. And then they have to come back January 7th, I believe, for their second meeting for their conditional use permit, because it's a two-meeting process that we're required to do by law. And then if everything goes well and they are approved, they'll be starting to look at
Support comes from Kenosha Winter Harbor Market, featuring Taste of Paris Bakery and Cafe, offering exquisite cakes and pies for Thanksgiving, along with croissants, turnovers, breads, and cookies. The market is open Saturdays from 10 until 2 at its new location near the museums.
An online request this morning from Chuck in Door County, and he asked to hear a portion of the Violin Concerto No. 3 by Mozart. And he says, what can I say? I just love stringed instruments, and you can't beat Mozart, of course. And he also requested a version played by Anne-Sophie Mutter. He says, Mutter is a superb violinist. Here, you get to hear her in two roles. She is not only the solo violinist, but also the conductor of the London Philharmonic Orchestra. And we'll hear movements number 2 and 3 from the Violin Concerto No. 3 by Mozart.
Thank you. Thank you.
Second and third movements of the Violin Concerto No. 3 by Mozart, Anne-Sophie Mutter, doing double duty as violin soloist and conductor of the London Philharmonic Orchestra. And that was the request of Chuck from Door County. Coming up in about 10 minutes, a news update from NPR. Then we'll be back with another 55 minutes of Classics by Request, and it looks like we have enough requests to take us all the way to 1 o'clock this afternoon. I spoke with James of Wanakee a little while ago, and he wanted to hear the Prince of Denmark March, music by Jeremiah Clark, and I found an arrangement by the London Trumpet Orchestra. This is an orchestra comprised of 28 trumpet players, conducted by Jeffrey Simon.
Lots of folk gathered there, all the friends I know. Morning star lights the way, restless dream all dawn. Shadows gone, break a day, real life just begun.
Words added to Antonín Dvořák's great tune, the great melody from the New World Symphony, second movement, and that called Going Home. We heard a performance there from the ensemble known as Cantus, the male vocal ensemble from the Twin Cities. And that was the request of Michael in White Lake. Classics by request from Wisconsin Public Radio. Just ahead, we have a news update from NPR, and then we'll be back with another 55 minutes of your requests. Then at 1 o'clock this afternoon, we continue with classical music, Saturday Classics, and we will hear some music by Beethoven, one of his piano sonatas, also some music by Camille Saint-Saëns, the Fine Arts Quartet, and lots of good things to listen to between 1 and 4 this afternoon. Music selected by Ruth Ann Bessman.